Morning. It's a pleasure to be with you all. Our reading this morning was from the 19th Psalm. And I suppose of the Psalms, that's one of the famous ones. It's up there with 23 and number 1 and 119. And it's a beautiful Psalm. And when we think about looking at the heavens in wonderment at God's artistic creativity and His power, it compels us to things. And that's what's neat about the creation, is it in itself is a testimony. All of nature has God's fingerprints all over it. And when we look at the stars, even from a young age, we look at the stars and we look at the mountains and the lakes and the rivers and the oceans, and we wonder at who made this. And it's a wonderful jumping off point. It's a wonderful place to start. But as the 19th Psalm lets us know, we can look at the creation and see that there must be a creator. We can see the order and the design. We can see the laws of nature, if you will. But those things by themselves don't guide me towards righteousness. They don't convict me, as the 19th Psalm says, they don't convict my soul. I have to have more than the testimony of the stars and the sun and the moon. I need God's law, which is perfect. Not only does God's word convict my soul, but it also, it says, makes wise the simple. It makes wise the simple. Now, there is a great deal of difference between being simple and being stupid. To most of us, the word simple conjures up thoughts of a near imbecile, or as some would put it, a person who is several bricks short of a load. But that is not what is meant by the term simple in the Bible, and especially in the book of Proverbs. The word simple jumps up constantly throughout the book of Proverbs. Being simple in the book of Proverbs is actually just a natural stage of development that every single one of us goes through. It's part of adolescence, for instance. Everyone must go through the simple phase of life, they just as they have to go through puberty. But simplicity is also, according to Proverbs, a very dangerous time in life. Because those who are simple are vulnerable and gullible and naive. Furthermore, being simple is one short step from being a fool. So this critical period in life must be lived very carefully. Those of us who have already passed to this point in life may now have children or grandchildren who fall into this category. But if not, we nevertheless find it necessary to deal with those who are simple. And therefore, we too must listen well to the words of Proverbs as they define both the condition and the cure for those who are simple. And as all things, when we talk about this simple or simplicity in this sense of adolescent thinking or unnuanced thinking, we have to keep in mind that just because we've aged doesn't make us wise. It doesn't mean that we're no longer simple. Because many of us can fall into temptation. Many of us can be made fools of. And it's good to remember that we are all suckers for something. Most of us are suckers for something. Some of us can't say no to sugar. Some of us can't say no to caffeine. Some of us can't say no to a pretty face. Whatever it is, we all tend to be suckers for something. So when we think about the simple, let's not just think about others that we might know, but also, as always, we need to look at ourselves. But in the book of Proverbs, simplicity is, or simple-mindedness, is primarily an ailment of the young. Being simple is a lot like having pimples. It comes with adolescence. Almost unconsciously, we regard the simple as those who are young, and several proverbs suggest by their parallels that being simple is nearly synonymous with it. In Proverbs 1:4 says, to give prudence to the naive, or simple, to give prudence to the simple. To the youth, knowledge and discretion. Now, Proverbs is in part poetry, and this is a poetic device that appears in almost every language, which you have two parallel statements, and you're supposed to equate the one with the other. When I was in college, we were going through some Norse poetry, if you can believe that. And there was this stanza that talked about the dogs of war, and then the next stanza talked about the hounds of battle. And it left you with the understanding that the dogs of war were also the hounds of battle. They were one and the same. So here we have the simple and youth mentioned together. And so primarily that's where that association is made. In Proverbs 7:7 it says, "And I saw among the simple ones, and I discerned among the youths a young man lacking sense." A young man lacking sense. So a young man lacking sense is a simple one or a naive person. So there are many implications of this. One, and this is important to remember, being simple is not a sin. Being simple is not a sin. Everyone goes through adolescence. Everyone goes through the teenage years. So it's not a sin to be simple, just as it's not a sin to be immature. But it is often uninspiring if we stay that way. In 1 Corinthians 3, Paul was writing to the Corinthian brethren about some carnal things that were among them. And when they were, he reminded them when they were first converted, these saints were described by Paul as men of flesh and babes in 1 Corinthians 3:1. As such, they could only handle milk, but not meat. So there was no condemnation by Paul for this stage of immaturity because nothing more was to be expected of them while they were in that stage. I never expected any of my newborn children to be able to chew meat, for instance, until they had developed teeth, and then they had developed the ability to chew it. Paul was writing to them after considerable time had passed, and their immaturity had digressed into carnality. And those are two different things. Because carnality is willful ignorance and immaturity put together. It's an unwillingness to progress. And that's when we start running into problems with the simple. It's when they want to stay children. I've noticed this in several of my children that when we've put more on them as far as their expectations for their behavior go to act a little older, oftentimes there's a time period there where they actually go backwards a little bit because I think some people are just wired that they don't want to progress to the next stage. I've seen children cry when they were told that one day they would have jobs and they would have a family and they would have all these responsibilities and it wouldn't just all be fun and playtime anymore, that being an adult was constant work. Not that we can't enjoy that, but I've seen children cry when they do that. If we see people that are older than children do that, then it starts to go into being really pitiable and pathetic. So while Paul didn't condemn them for their immaturity, he did condemn them for their carnality. So secondly, simplicity is a stage in one's growth. And nothing can help being at the stage where it's at. But one cannot remain simple, just as one cannot remain an adolescent. As the Corinthian babes had to mature or become willfully carnal as their choice, so the simple must decide to become wise or to become a fool in the book of Proverbs. Because it is a phase of life, simplicity passes and grows into something else. No one actually stays simple. They become wiser or they become a fool. Thirdly, simplicity is not remedied by time. And we've probably all seen evidence of this. Simplicity is not remedied by time, but by choice. The son in chapter 1 of Proverbs, who is being taught by his father, is, I believe, simple. They're at that stage of life where they're not adults. And, it's interesting. I think we've learned now that the brain doesn't actually fully mature until about the age 25. So this is all a process. God has bound our abilities to the stage of life that we're at. And we can't achieve things until we've achieved certain levels in our development. But sooner or later, it all comes down to making a choice. And the father in Proverbs chapter 1 is fully aware that this lad, the one he calls son, has to make that choice. Either walk in the way of the wise or follow evil and wicked men or women, as the book of Proverbs has us, into the path of folly. And this change will not be brought about by the passing of time simply by itself, but by conscious decisions and effort, striving to become wiser and more prudent. And we see this throughout the first chapter of Proverbs. Proverbs 1 verse 10, 15, 22, and 23 all talk about how we have to make an effort in this regard. Wisdom does not evolve. It is not a product of time and chance. No one became wise by accident or being struck by lightning. It comes from resolve to forsake folly and to pursue wisdom as if it is a precious treasure. And of course, we know where that wisdom comes from. And that also ties into the 19th Psalm that was read for us. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than the honey and the honeycomb. Those are the words that make wise the simple. So God wants us to pursue wisdom like we would treasure. Fourth thing we learn in Proverbs about the simple. While simplicity is normally a malady of the young, every age has its pitfalls, as I've mentioned before. Do not think that just because one has passed through the pitfalls of youth, that all danger has passed. I'm in my midlife, is what they call it. I'm not having a crisis. But I'm in what they call the midlife. And I've noticed that while temptations have changed, there are still temptations. There are still things that entice me and draw and call out to me. Every age has its pitfalls. So do not think that because we've passed through the stage of youth that we've surpassed pitfalls. Madam Folly has in her bag of tricks a temptation for those of every age. Paul warns Timothy about the dangers of youth. And that's usually kind of our go-tos when we think about the temptations of this world. We tend to think about the temptations of youth. Flee also youthful lusts. Paul was a relatively young man, probably younger than I am now. And Paul spent some time on that in 1 Timothy 4, 12, the fifth chapter, first couple verses of 1 Timothy, and also 1 Timothy 6, 11. But Paul was an older saint instructing a younger saint at that time, but he also had lessons for older saints. For instance, Titus 2, 2 through 5. Today we are well aware of what has been called the midlife crisis, and this helps explain David's fall, perhaps, into immorality in 2 Samuel 11. He had gotten to an age where he didn't feel like doing king stuff anymore. You know, he had sent his army out to fight on his behalf, but it said, you know, it was a time of year when kings are out making war. David was in his palace. He probably was not an old man. And it seems implied to me that David probably still technically had the energy to go out and do kingly things. But he had just decided that he wasn't going to. So it's a good example. David is a good example of the fact that we will never outgrow temptation. And, you know, if we're not careful, those youthful lusts, they'll come back and bite us too. The simple, however, simplicity does not seem to only be a malady of the young in that regard. The fifth thing that I think we can see from simplicity in the book of Proverbs is that simplicity is also a condition that is fraught with all kinds of dangers. The simple face great danger as a result of, as I see it, three contributing factors as the book of Proverbs describes it. One, the simple are simply deficient in some essential areas. One, they lack wisdom, according to Psalm 19 and 7. So they lack wisdom. Secondly, and all these are related, but they do have some nuance to them. Secondly, they lack discretion according to Proverbs 1:4. And then they lack understanding, according to Proverbs 9:4-16. And then perhaps one of my favorite ones is Proverbs 7:7, where it says they lack sense. And Proverbs 7 is kind of an interesting one that we'll take a little bit of a closer look at here in a few moments. Beyond this, those who are simple lack the ability to critically analyze what others tell them. In other words, they are gullible. The naive believes everything, but the prudent man considers his steps. That's Proverbs 14:15. The naive believes everything, but the prudent man considers his steps. Then Proverbs 22:3 says, the prudent sees the evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished for it. So the simple have the inability to see nuance, to see shades of meaning, to also be able to discern people's motives, etc. It just goes on and on. They can't see 30 seconds in front of their faces. And that's the way my children are. They cannot see the inevitability of certain actions, especially the painful ones. And that's the folly that the simple fall into. That's the trap that they fall into, I should say, is simplicity has some nice things about it, but it also has some bad things. Next, the simple, like all of fallen mankind, are inclined towards evil and rebellion, not towards what is good and righteous. So while the simple are ignorant and inexperienced, they are also inclined toward wickedness and folly. In a sense, we might think of this as they are, spiritually speaking, accident prone, kind of like a toddler. They tumble down steps. Somehow they fall up steps. I didn't know that was possible until I had toddlers of my own, but you can fall up steps. They're just accident prone. They tend toward what is harmful and destructive. Left to themselves, the simple will not become wise, but will stumble into folly and disaster. And you've seen examples of this probably many times, because as soon as I tell my children not to touch something because it's hot, what are they first inclined to do? Figure it out for themselves. They tend towards destructive behavior just by sheer accident. How long, O simple ones, will you love simplicity? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Proverbs 1:22. How long will the naive ones or simple ones love simplicity? So God wants us to face the inevitable maturation process, and not just face it, but actually pursue the maturation process, to desire it, to love learning, to love understanding, to love considering and meditating on things. He wants us to learn how to think with nuance. So while we try to give people the benefit of the doubt, I don't think God expects us to be fools or gullible or naive. He wants us to believe all things and bear all things, endure all things, but it doesn't seem that he necessarily wants us to be walked over because we're choosing not to think. Proverbs 1:32, the waywardness of the naive shall kill them, and the complacency of fools shall destroy them. Proverbs 14:18, the naive inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge. So we see the relationship here. It's not really a hard lesson to understand, but it's a good reminder of us that we need to always be advancing as long as we can, as much as we can. Learn something new. Try something different. Try to look at a passage that you've read 10,000 times in a new light. Whatever it is, just try to keep treating the Lord's Word as more precious than gold. Another thing we learn is that the simple are often the target of those who are evil and unscrupulous, according to Proverbs. So not only do the simple seem to find catastrophe, It also seems that the way this sinful world works is that it's going to look for them aggressively and proactively as well. In nature, wild animals often pursue the young offspring of their prey because of their naivete and vulnerability. They have little danger sense yet and are easily deceived or lured into danger. So too in human nature. A con artist makes it his business to identify gullible people and to profit from his or her naivete. The simple are often the victims of evil men and women who know that the simple are vulnerable. It is for this reason that a wise father warns his son about solicitations of greedy and violent men, according to Proverbs 1, 10 through 19. Many young men have been lured into criminal behavior and gangs because the gangs themselves have developed a very advanced recruitment capacity and the ability to entice young men into gangs. And this has been going on for thousands of years. Youth gangs are not a creation of the early 20th century. They've been around forever because they've learned who to look for. Similarly, in Proverbs chapter 7, we learn that the adulterous woman particularly seeks out the naive. So thus will the simple tend to wander toward disaster himself. Let's turn briefly to Proverbs chapter 7. Because while I think we're supposed to sympathize with this young man in some respects, we're also supposed to look at it and say, wow, he shouldn't have done that. So, Proverbs 7, verse 6, for the window of the house, well, he warns in verse 5, you may keep, that they may keep you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words. For at the window of my house, I looked through my lattice and saw among the simple, I perceived among the youths, a young man devoid of understanding, passing along the street near her corner. And he took the path to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark of night. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him with an impudent face. She said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face. And I have found you. I spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfume. She goes on and on to entice this young man from there. And it seems implied in the text that the young man was supposed to know what section of town he is, that she was there and what type of person she was, and how easily he might be swayed by her entrapments. But he's not. And the blame in the passage is totally placed on him for being simple. He was at a stage in life where he was young still, but he should have been advanced enough to know. Joseph was a young man, but he knew, so he ran. And if that's all you can do, then if that's the best you can do, then great, do it. But we see, just as with Potiphar's wife and the woman here and other instances in the Bible that we could think of, and probably many instances in our own lives that we could share, we can see quite clearly that catastrophe is actively looking for us. Temptations and snares are actively seeking us. Peter told us that that Satan walks about as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. So we already know all these things. It's just we need to make sure that we have constant awareness and vigilance. And that's mostly what this requires, is vigilance. I have to get up every day and decide that today I'm going to serve the Lord to the best of my ability. Make that decision the first decision you make every day. And then arm yourself with the wisdom of God's word. The last thing that I think the book of Proverbs teaches us about the simple, and it's the one that gives us hope, is that simplicity, while a dangerous malady, it's definitely not an incurable one. There is hope for the simple, just as there is hope that my children will grow up and leave the house someday. For not all who are simple succumb to the wiles of Madame Folly. I've known many young men and women who avoided folly, even through these most dangerous stages of their lives, when they have all of these passions that are drawing them in one direction, they still chose, even without full understanding of the dangers, they chose the right thing. And that's the best way to arm ourselves with wisdom and prudence and discretion and knowledge and understanding, is to just, even if we don't always understand something, do what we're told is right. That's the best thing that young people can do. And if we find, at whatever age we're in, if we find ourselves that we've been drawn or we've stumbled or we've veered to the left hand or to the right, is to just start doing what we know is right. Because sometimes it seems that God has decided that if we just pursue a good thing always, if we persevere in good things, eventually we'll come to the understanding of why God has us persevere in those things. And we tell our children that all the time. I've told them several times, there are some things I can't explain to you yet, but I just want you to do it this way because eventually you're going to understand. Or someday I'll be able to think of a way that I can properly explain it. But God wants us to persevere in good things all the time and to flee wickedness because it's good for us. And if nothing else, can we understand that? Can I impart that level of knowledge to my children or to your grandchildren or whoever we come into contact with? Young people have persevered in goodness and have avoided most of the follies of youth. It is possible. But that's something that we don't hear from our culture today. How can we possibly ask young people to wait till marriage? We hear that all the time. But is it possible? Well, I did. And I know I'm not alone. So it's definitely possible to avoid and flee youthful lusts. Simplicity is a phase in the normal growth and development of a person. It is one that every wise man and woman has gone through and passed through. Some with greater success than others, but they all pass through it. Simplicity is something like Vanity Fair in Pilgrim's Progress. Every pilgrim must pass through it, and while some will succumb to its temptations, others will pass through it and be stronger for having gone through that experience. Madame Folly seeks to lead astray those who are simple, but wisdom, who is also described as a lady in the book of Proverbs, also calls out to the simple, warning them of the dangers ahead and urging them to turn from the folly and to seek wisdom. So like the young man who could have gone to a different part of town, and he should have known what part of town he was in, wisdom calls us to the better parts of town. So there is hope for the simple. They need not learn by personal failure. In fact, one of the marks of wisdom is to learn by others' failures. That's called prudence. So in the 19th Psalm, a beautiful psalm, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork. All of those things that we see in creation are marvels, and they can tell us that there has to be a creator. Now go and find Him. Find out what He wants. Find out what He requires of you. What standards does He have? So those things are things that I cannot learn from looking at nature. And the other thing I found as I've aged and as I've grown a little bit is that I actually appreciate the wonder of nature more now than I did even in the simplicity of my youth. It's more beautiful and wondrous to me now, because I have a greater understanding of the one who made it. I have a greater understanding and appreciation for my parents and their own struggles and their own, not only failures, but their own victories. Because I understand the human condition better and I understand how hard it can be to be a Christian. So as we go through these stages of life, we're supposed to not only gain more wisdom, but we're supposed to, with that wisdom, gain understanding. And understanding is an appreciation for those things. It's being able to see the nuance. It's able to see the man behind the curtain, for instance. But it's also the ability to, in all situations, understand that there is a God and that He has us in His very, very capable and strong hands. That is, as long as we keep ourselves in the love of Jesus, nothing on this earth can snatch us out. Nothing can take us away from Him. We live in an interesting time, and I'm not going to say I understand all that's going on. A lot of times it takes quite some time, but I was reading a passage not too long ago, and I'll read a verse that Jesus said, but He was talking about the destruction of Jerusalem and what was to come after that. And in Luke chapter 21, when He's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, He gets to verse 25 and He says, "There will be signs in the sun, in the moon, and in the stars. And on the earth," "there will be signs in the sun, in the moon, and in the stars." So mankind has always looked to the heavens. When you and I look to the heavens, we look at the heavens and we wonder about God and how powerful He is. And it gives us comfort and encouragement. But what does it do for the nations, for those who do not belong to God? So there will be signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars, and on the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, and the sea and the waves roaring. Men's hearts failing them from fear and the expectation of those things which are coming on the earth. For the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. I can't guarantee that a lot of the stuff we're seeing, and I think we're probably going to see more radical changes in the future years and decades. But we may be at the beginning of those things. I think I see evidence of men's hearts failing from fear and the expectations and the distress and the perplexity, the confusion. It just means one thing, and that's verse 28. Now, when these things begin to happen, look and fill up your head and lift up your heads, because your redemption draws near. Your redemption draws near. There was an excellent article in the Gospel Messenger, I think about a month or two ago, written by John Lee. If you haven't read it, I want you to read it. It talks about the uncertainty of these times and the certainty of the things that we believe. And it's a good reminder that this world can burn up or burn down or whatever it's going to do. But as long as we maintain our faith, we have the assurance and the expectation that Jesus is going to lift us up out of all of this. So keep your head up and stay on your knees in prayer and pursue wisdom and don't despair. Because nothing that we see in the world and all its uncertainties is outside of God's control, and it's certainly nothing that He can't handle. And it seems that it was all things that He foresaw in the first place. So let's maintain our faith and let's seek to gain in wisdom and understanding. If there's anything this congregation can do for you this morning, we invite you to come forward as we stand and sing the number that Paul selected.